welcome to the Better and Longer podcast. In today's episode, we're featuring our new series, Roots of Resilience, Empowering Kinship Families Amid Opioid Recovery. This series is made possible by the One Ohio Recovery Foundation. I'm Marcia Rose, Supervisor of the Kinship Navigator Program at the Area Office on Aging of Northwestern Ohio, Inc.
I'm Arcelia Armstrong, Director of the Caregiver Support and Kinship Navigator Programs at the Area Office on Aging of Northwestern Ohio, Incorporated. Joining us today is Mindy Rapp, Executive Director of Seagate Food Bank. In today's episode, we're exploring how the opioid epidemic has affected families across our region and how organizations like Seagate Food Bank are stepping in to help families heal one meal at a time, and kinship caregivers who stepped in to raise their grandchildren after their family was impacted by addiction. Together, we'll talk about how food, care, and community support can help families rebuild hope in the face of crisis.
I wanted to mention a couple quick facts from the Food Research and Action Center about impacts of food insecurity. Childhood food insecurity is associated with poor health status, developmental risk, mental health problems, and poor educational outcomes. Food insecurity may present in a family as food anxiety, diet monotony, decreased nutrition quality, and inadequate food intake. Mindy, can you tell us a bit about Seagate Food Bank and how it serves families in our community?
Sure. Seagate Food Bank has been around since the late 70s. It was started totally by accident by a lady named Alice Mosniak, who was training seniors to put them back out into the workforce. And she would tell everyone to bring their lunch, and no one brought their lunch. So she realized it's because they didn't have any food. So it started in a garage. I'm very proud of what she did because it started in our garage because Alice is my mom. And it blew up into what we have today, which we serve eight Northwestern Ohio counties and one Northeast Ohio county. And we are an independent food bank. We are not part of Feeding America or the Ohio Association of Food Banks. So sometimes we do have to work a little bit harder. But that's okay. We get it done. We have many different programs. We have two USDA programs. One is called TFAP, or Temporary Emergency Food Program. And that, way back in the day when it started, was the cheese and butter program. Mm-hmm. Now it's all different kinds of food that we get for that. And that's what goes out to our partner agencies to serve the individuals. Then we also have CSFP, or Commodity Supplemental Food Program. We call it the Senior Box because that's who it goes to. We distribute between 4,000 and 5,000 of these boxes every single month to seniors over the age of 60 and who meet income guidelines. And then in addition, we put in other programs where we see a need. The one that we're going to talk about today is the FIRST program, which stands for Families in Recovery Staying Together. And that is to address the opiate issue. There are a lot of people raising children that are not their own due to this issue. And a lot of times those families seem to fall through the cracks, especially when it comes to food. If they don't have custody of the children, they can't get help through SNAP and other places like that. So that's where we come in. And we work with the Kinship Navigator Program, and they come and get food for their families, and that's one thing they don't have to worry about.
Thank you, Mindy, so much. Thank you to your family, for your mom, for getting this off the ground and helping to support the community. It's just very, like you said, it's critical need in our community, across our area. According to a study published in JAMA Psychiatry in May, more than 321,000 children in the United States lost a parent to a drug overdose between 2011 and 2021, highlighting the devastating impact of the opioid epidemic. And nationally, for every one child being raised by kin in foster care, there are 19 children being raised by kin outside of foster care. And here, closer to home in Ohio, for every one child being raised by kin in foster care, there are 34 being raised by kin outside of foster care. How did the opioid epidemic begin to intersect with your organization's mission?
Actually, it's kind of a personal issue. We did have a family member that had an issue with opiates, and that's where we saw the need. We saw the need through one-on-one, through personal experiences, and getting to know exactly what the opiate issue is. It's people don't wake up and say, "I think I want to be an addict." It happens slowly, but quickly. And what families have to realize is that person is not the straight A student that we knew. It is the drugs now talking. And once we get through that and say, okay, what do we need to do? Which sometimes is being the bad guy and maybe turning your back a little bit on that person so they can heal themselves. But if there are children involved, now you have to take care of the children. That's the most important part. The person with the addiction has to take care of themselves and has to figure it out themselves. But the children need the help. So that's where that came about. And then I was seeing that a lot of people who had little ones with them and kind of talking to them and finding out that they didn't have food. And a lot of them didn't have custody of the kids. So that adds another problem into the whole situation. So that's where it started. And we thought, well, we can help with that. That's what we do is food. So we came up with the first program.
Thank you for your commitment to our community. So many of our kinship families have really benefited from that support.
Mindy, what have you seen in recent years in terms of families, especially kinship caregivers, turning to you for support?
Well, I see that the numbers are not going down, which is kind of sad. I would hope once the powers that be figured out where all of this was coming from, that would kind of stop or slow down the process. But I still see the same amount of people coming. Hopefully, the ones that aren't coming anymore, that the person got help and is back on their feet again, and the families are back reunited. But we have no way of knowing that, so yeah. We just hope so.
The power of community. How does food, something so basic, become such a powerful form of support for families in crisis?
Usually food is the last thing that families think about. They have to worry about their keeping the lights on, keeping the heat on, keeping a roof over their head. And by the end of the month, you find out that you don't have any money for food anymore. And that's the one thing is we're proud of, too, at Seagate, is we're very welcoming. There's no judgment. There's no anything there. We keep it light, and we're a little goofy, and we have fun. And so the people feel comfortable coming to us, which is good, because then they will come back, and they will do it again. And if they don't have to worry about food, that's one thing off of their plate of worries that they can move on with.
Mindy, what does community mean to you in the context of healing from addiction's impact?
Community is, that's all of us. That's the, all of our whole county, our whole city, our whole neighborhood. It's also family. And if you look at that, I think of our whole community as family, and we should take care of each other. And this is just one way that Seagate can add to that care. And it's an easy thing for us to do. So it's kind of a no-brainer. It's important, and it needs to be done.
Oh, thank you again. We just can't thank you enough for all of the support that Seagate Food Bank provides in the community. please share information about impactful partnerships, like with our Kinship Navigator program and the Seagate Food Bank's Families in Recovery Sticking Together program. Could you expound on that a little bit more?
Sure. Well, we've reached out to not only Kinship Navigator, but any of the other organizations that deal with the opiate issue in one way or another. And we provide the same service to them and their clients. The one thing is we don't have the manpower to do all the intake because the food part of it is just a small part of what's needed in that family. And so that's where, you know, like Kinship Navigator, they can help the whole family, and we're just a little tiny piece of that help. And but we're there to do that. So we also offer that same thing to other agencies that take care of people who are in crisis at the moment.
You are, we really appreciate it again, Mindy. We can't stress it enough. Like, you're such a key component for our families and for the support that they rely on each day. So thank you for providing that support.
It's really incredible to hear how compassion and connection can rebuild trust. One family, one meal, one moment at a time. How does Seagate Food Bank help break down stigma and provide dignity to the families you serve?
And it's just it. What I said before is we're in no judgment area when you come in. People come to us at their most vulnerable. So to be mean or to be hateful or anything like that doesn't exist where we are. We're here to help. We're here to help for whatever reason. And that's part of it. That's very important. So that the people can feel comfortable and can come. Most time, that's the last place they want to come.
Well, looking ahead, building a brighter future, how can community members, whether individuals, businesses, or volunteers, get involved?
Wow. So you can go to our website, which is seagatefoodbank.org. There are ways to do to donate monetarily on the website, to do food collections, and also to volunteer. We only have 15 paid employees at the food bank, so we rely a lot on volunteers. The FIRST program relies a lot on volunteers. We have volunteers that come in the day when people come to pick up food, that greet them and take them through to see what it is that they need. We also have volunteers that sort and pack the food. So volunteers is a key component to everything that we're able to accomplish at the food bank.
Thank you. And with this message getting out too, Mindy, hopefully we can get some more volunteers available to help support the mission.
That would be great.
And talking about spreading the word, I just want to mention that if you, as a listener, are a kinship caregiver, grandparent, or relative raising children, you can get support through the FIRST program and other services and supports by calling the Area Office on Aging Kinship Navigator Program. Our phone number is 419-382-0624. And then, Mindy, I wanted to ask you this question. If you have any superpower to help kinship families, what would it be and why?
I think what I would want is for the person with the addiction to get help and to get healed. And 'cause it's most important, I think, for those children, for that parent to be back with them. And it is possible. It is possible to find help. That's one thing also that the FIRST program does, provide food to people going through recovery. And so that's one less thing off of their plate to worry about, is how they're going to feed themselves while they're going through recovery. And I just think that if that issue wasn't there anymore, that would probably be the best thing, but I don't know how to get rid of it at the moment. So just so that the people get help, that they know that there is help out there and they can get better, because it's an illness. It's not something that people choose to do. I think that they don't want to be there. They just don't know how to get out of it. So that's the one thing, is that all of these parents find help so that they can get back to their babies.
Thank you for your honesty, your strength, your compassion. Your stories remind us that healing doesn't happen in isolation. It happens when communities come together. And to our listeners, remember, one act of kindness, one shared meal, one moment of care can change someone's life.
I wanted to add today that to help our families impacted by opioids, we do have a publication. It's called our Parenting Smarts Resource Guide. This guide was recently updated for our 11th edition. Additionally, we are excited to announce the release of a new publication entitled Empowering Kinship Families, Resources for Opioid Recovery and Prevention. That new publication will be released very soon and is a companion piece to our Parenting Smarts Resource Guide. Welcome to the Better and Longer podcast. In today's episode, we're featuring our new series, Roots of Resilience, Empowering Kinship Families Amid Opioid Recovery. This series is made possible by the One Ohio Recovery Foundation. I'm Marcia Rose, supervisor of the Kinship Navigator Program at the Area Office on Aging of Northwestern Ohio. Joining me today are Alan and Patricia. In today's episode, we're exploring how the opioid epidemic has affected families all across the region and how organizations like Seagate Food Bank are stepping in to help families heal one meal at a time. And kinship caregivers who stepped in to raise their grandchildren after their family was impacted by addiction. Together, we'll talk about how food, care, and community support can help families rebuild hope in the face of crisis. Welcome, Patricia and Alan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As we get started, I just wanted to put out a couple quick facts about the impacts of food insecurity. The Food Research and Action Center has statistics about childhood food insecurity that is associated with poor health status, developmental risk, mental health problems, and poor educational outcomes. Food insecurity may present in a family as food anxiety, diet monotony, decreased nutrition quality, and inadequate food intake. Patricia and Alan, thank you for being here today and sharing your story. Can you tell us what led you to step in as a kinship caregiver?
Well, let me just say, first of all, I want to thank you and the Kinship Navigator Program for having us on. We welcome the opportunity to share with whosoever about what we do, what we stepped in to do for our grandkids. And we had a situation where we had our daughter. She got mixed up with the wrong crowd. And so being, you know, experienced, we had already raised a family and so on. And so we know what it takes to raise a family. So we saw the situation. So we want to step in to give the kids an opportunity to grow up in a two-parent family. So we're happy to share that, and whatever we could do to help somebody else, you know, in the way of our story, we are willing to do that.
There's a total of five grandchildren, by the way. So there's four girls and one boy.
According to a study published by the Journal of the American Medical Association Psychiatry back in May, more than 321,000 children in the United States lost a parent due to a drug overdose between 2011 and 2021, highlighting the devastating impact of the opioid epidemic. And a few other quick facts and statistics. On a national level, there are about 2.5 million children who live with grandparents or other kin without parents in the home. And for every child, for every one child raised by kin in foster care, there are 19 more children being raised by kin outside the foster care system. And then a little closer to home here in Ohio, there are almost 240,000 children who live in homes where a relative is the head of household. And for every one child in Ohio that is raised by kin in foster care, we have 34 children being raised by kin outside of foster care. And that's a very impactful number to think about. There's many, many kinship caregivers in Ohio and across the nation. Mm-hmm. So back to your story, what was that transition like for you emotionally, financially, and logistically?
I'll tell you, we didn't sign up for it, okay? But being experienced in life, you know for yourself, if you were growing up and didn't have, people parents to take care of you and so on, you would feel left out. And so we could sort of empathize. In other words, we could see the situation where the children needed guidance, they needed love. And so we stepped in because, like I said, we had lived the life, we had raised children, and we, you know, experienced what it is to be left out. What I mean by that is we've seen other families and other families' struggles. So we'll step in to raise our grandkids because we figure we will give them the better opportunity to grow up in a more pleasant situation.
Yeah, and emotionally, it took a toll because emotionally, you know, we're older and, you know, we have to deal with teenagers. Anyone know about that, you know? And also financially, you know, we're just, you know, living off of Social Security. So the both of us living off of Social Security and asking the government for help, that's kind of difficult in our situation, you know, because they don't look at us as adoptees, as we adopted the children. So they really don't give that much help, but they give a little help, but not much help. So financially, emotionally, it takes a toll, but, you know, we're making it through.
Yeah, and it was so important because it kept those grandkids out of foster care. And kept them with kin, which is shown to have much better results, you know, with maintaining your cultural identity, sibling ties, you know, helping with better mental health and behavioral health outcomes.
Absolutely.
And also just that stability of a stable home.
Absolutely.
So how did you first learn about support for kinship and grand families? And what kind of support did you receive?
I heard about it through my older sister. Oh, years ago, my older sister. She mentioned to me about the program. She said, you probably can get some help, you know, through the Kinship Navigator program. I didn't know anything about it. And I think I mentioned it to my husband, and he had something. What was that we was doing? We needed some help on something, but I learned about it through my older sister.
Okay. And when you contacted the Kinship Navigator program, and since then, what kind of supports have you received from the program?
Well, emotional support, because a lot of times we'll have Zoom meetings, which is very important because we get to interact with other people who are going through the same thing that we're going through, other caregivers, and we have become a family of somewhat, you know. And we have also received food from the Seagate Food Bank. So that's very important because it helps to cover the days when, you know, food's running out, money's running out. So we've gotten that support.
Yeah, and with teenagers, we all know that they eat quite a bit, don't they?
Yes, they do, especially the boys.
Yes, yes, indeed. Now, you recently completed our Guiding Good Choices evidence-based program that helps families who've been impacted by opioids kind of learn how to interact and have those discussions with the children in your care, teenagers particularly.
Yes.
That has been shown. That program has been shown to reduce risky behaviors. What did you think about Guiding Good Choices?
I think it helped a lot in teaching me a lot of ways to deal with teenagers, you know, what they're going through, and how it taught me how to respond a lot to what they're going through. It taught me not to think about what I feel, but what they feel, and make sure my reaction was not coming from just me, but from coming from what they're experiencing as teenagers. Because we know teenagers in today's world, it's really difficult, from school to friends, from peers. So it's taught me a lot on that point, how to deal with, you know, their reaction and don't get mad and flare off and get to understand them.
Yeah, and then ultimately, hopefully, have a better result.
Absolutely, yeah. 100%.
Yeah. So the power of community support is so important. How does food, something so basic, become such a powerful form of support for families in crisis?
Truth be told, the Kinston Navigator program, my wife is more involved. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm her support. I support my wife. She's up front with the Kinship Navigator program. And so I don't mind saying that I'm sort of, she would be the president, I would be the vice president. So
right.
When it comes to a lot of interactions, mm-hmm. I'm fully supportive. But I'm going to let her answer the question about the food, because she's better.
Well, it definitely helps financially, because, you know, like I said earlier, that in them days that you don't have the finances, you know, when you go and receive the food from the food bank, which is fantastic, by the way, I'm grateful to receive it. And it has a lot of good nutritious food in there. It has snacks for the kids, you know. And it helps financially, because we already know now that it's nothing more important than finances right now at this time. Mm-hmm. And we need all the help that we can get, and I'm grateful for it.
Yeah, it does stretch your dollar farther.
Definitely.
Especially in these times with the economy and cost of groceries.
Yes, it does.
I also think, too, when we talk about food, and again, it's a very simple concept, but it does, those family meals and having that time together brings you together as a family to talk about your day, talk about different things, and just spend that time bonding. Mm-hmm. And it's so important.
Yeah, my grandson, he's a home-cooked meal teenager. Oh, Lord. He's 15, and all he wants is granny's food.
Yeah.
Granny, what are you cooking today? I'm like, Lord, I got to get some food around here.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Yes, yes.
I tell him when he grows up, he's definitely going to want to find a wife like his granny.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that he does someday. So, Patricia and Alan, what does community mean to you in the context of healing from addiction's impact?
Community, it means a lot, because if you... some people, you know, they're hermits, right? And they're isolated. And so I'm thinking the community brings people together, whereas that you can share experiences, you can share things that you're going through.
Support.
And instead of trying to go it alone, the community, you know, helps. Because people can empathize with what you're going through, and you can share experiences, and it helps out. And a lot of times people get isolated and get in the wrong crowd or think the wrong thoughts, and somebody introduced them to drugs. And for a lack of community, for lack of support, they find themselves with the wrong crowd, and they get mixed up. And before you know it, they are addicted. Mm-hmm. So community, and when I say community, I'm talking about a group of people who care, who have values, and so on and so forth, to share. Not the wrong crowd type mm-hmm. community, but a community of support to help that person as they navigate life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also say, old phrase, no man is an island. And it takes a village to raise children.
Mm-hmm.
So you need that support from your community. You need that support from your friends. You need that support from wherever you can get it from. So to have a good base community is good to have.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a big help. And yeah. I think, Alan, your point on isolation is so common mm-hmm. Among kinship families. Mm-hmm. You know, not only are you busy taking care of obligations and with mm-hmm. the children and maybe feel some type of stigma related mm-hmm. to maybe your biological child's actions that cause yes. this chain of events.
Mm-hmm.
And that by connecting with others, particularly those that have been through that same experience as you, mm-hmm. you know, and I feel like our kinship program is just one way that people connect mm-hmm. to feel less isolated and less alone and less like it's only happened to me, you know,
absolutely.
This woe is me.
Absolutely.
They can get some power from that connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I get from Zoom meetings.
Yeah.
You know, the connection, even though we're not physically there, you know, but from the Zoom meetings, I get that emotional, mental, spiritual support.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so important.
It's very important.
So can you describe how those community supports from food programs and other caregivers, and I think you just alluded to that,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Helps you feel seen and mm-hmm. helps you feel more supported? And are there other ways that you are connected and supported in your community through a faith-based organization or something of that nature?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, we do have a church.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about faith-based, there are times when we would interact with other churches and other members. By the way, we are Christians. So we associate with other Christian organizations. And I got to tell you, now, I can preach right now, but I won't, I won't stop preaching.
Yes,
but
yes,
let me just say the principles of the Bible. If one would immerse themselves in the principles of the Bible, read the Bible, meditate and study, you'll see a lot of situations in the Bible that we're going through today, because people don't realize that the Bible is talking about people, just like us, people who make mistakes. We can talk about the mistakes of David. We can talk about the mistakes of Moses, and how, especially a story that Jesus told about the prodigal son. And the prodigal son story, it would definitely relate to a person, opioid addiction, because it talks
Absolutely.
About a son who went wayward and he wasted his substance on riotous living and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And just like our daughter, she's doing great now. That son in the prodigal son story, he came to himself. In other words, he hit rock bottom. And he came to himself and he said, how many hired servants of my father have food and to spare? And I'm basically starving. I will go to my father and say, Father, I'm no more worthy to be your son. Make me as a hired servant. And the father wouldn't have it. He welcomed his son in, put a robe on him, a ring on his finger, hugged him and so on, and welcomed him back.
Yeah, just like we would do our daughter.
Because that father realized mm-hmm. the son, what the son didn't know about life. And he was willing to give the son the space to go out, go on your own, see for yourself. And the father, I'm sure he prayed for his son.
Mm-hmm.
And he figured one day he's going to come to himself and he's going to come back. And that's what he did.
Yes.
So that's when you talk about faith-based, it's the stories in the Bible And the Christians realize, when we get together, we realize who we are, and we try to do an outreach to have others to come along and see what we are so excited about.
Yeah, well, basically, you know, that's our foundation right there. That's what helps us through with the grandchildren, you know, keeps us sane when we need it. So that's basically, you know, our faith.
There's a scripture.
Hold on to the faith.
There's a scripture that says, bring your children up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. And that's what we try to do.
Yes.
Now, when they leave home, we'll see if it makes an impact.
Yeah, that we can only hope that we instill those values in our grandchildren as we raise them, you know, so that they fly when they're out of the nest, so to speak.
Definitely.
And I'm so glad that you have a faith community that that supports you and encourages you in this journey. When we're talking about stigma and inspiring change, what would you say to someone who might be hesitant to ask for help?
Don't hesitate. Do not hesitate. Do not be ashamed, because there's nothing to be ashamed about, because you're not the only one going through it. Mm-hmm. That's why they have people out there to help, because you're not the only one going through it. And they know that there's many of yous, if I should say, out there that need help. So don't let the shame, blame stop you from reaching out, because, you know, it can mentally destroy you. If you sit yourself in a corner and say, oh, Lord, I don't want to go out and ask anyone for any help because I'm ashamed. No, don't be ashamed. Reach out, because there's a lot of support groups. There's a lot of people out there. You might help someone with your story. Mm-hmm. If you reach out and say, well, you know, I'm going through this, they might say, you know, I'm going through the same thing, and I needed this today. I needed that help. I needed that support from you. So don't be ashamed.
Believe it or not, a lot of people let pride get in the way.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Don't let your pride get in the way.
Oh, no, not me. And you be honest and say everybody needs help at some point in time. So don't let your pride get in the way. If you need help, you need to let somebody know.
Yeah, I think that's important to know. Yeah. And I know our Kinship Navigator program, we maintain confidentiality. Mm-hmm. We let you choose what you want to participate in. So it's very person-centered, and we're very non-judgmental about, we're here to support you and listen to your story and provide you with resources without judgment. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important for people to know who might be hesitant to reach out.
Yes.
So again, the opioid epidemic carries a lot of stigma, especially for families raising children because of it. What do you wish people better understood about your experience?
Don't give up. We've been doing this for our grandchildren for 22 years. Straight. I say straight.
Yes.
And it's been ups and downs, ins and outs. I'm telling you, sometimes I'm like, oh, Lord, what am I going to do today? But don't give up, because you can make it through. But like we're saying today, reach out. Ask for help. Kinship Navigator Program. Reach out. Beautiful program. Absolutely the best that you can go to in the city of Toledo to ask for help. Like you were saying, Miss Marcia, no judgment. No judgment zone. I can witness to that, because I'm in the program. And it makes me feel better. Every time I, you know, have communication with everybody, it makes me feel better. It helps me make it through. You know, and there's no judgment. So don't be afraid to reach out and ask for help.
If I could add to that, there's a sacrifice. There's a sacrifice, okay?
Yes.
And some people, they need to know what sacrifice is all about. Mm-hmm. So to add to that, what do I think people, you know, I would like for people to learn or to take away from what we do, is that you learn the sacrifice, and what it does, it teach you that there were people who sacrificed for us. You know, believe it or not. I mean, people did things for us, and we realized that it was a sacrifice for them to do that. And then we can pass that on And if other people can understand what it means to sacrifice, you're going to be blessed in the end, because it's a good feeling to know that your sacrifices to help someone, you never know what they're going to grow up to be, you see. And one day you hear so many stories about people, especially athletes and people in entertainment. They said, well, what do you attribute your success to? And they can look back on a grandparent or a granddad who taught them some things, and they were able to go out and be successful and came back to the grandparents and just did a lot of wonderful things for them, helped them, just showered them with whatever they needed because of the sacrifice that they made to get them to where they are. So if people could learn that, that would be a great thing.
That is very good advice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
So what message would you like to share with other caregivers, families who are struggling with those ripple effects of addiction? And I guess your main message to impact those families specific to the opioid epidemic?
There's hope at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. Like my husband was saying, it's a sacrifice. You know, you give up your life after you didn't raise, you know, all your children, and then you have to start all over again. In this time and age, you have to start all over again. But there is hope. There is hope at the end of the tunnel. You know, you can make it through. Don't give up. And like my husband was saying, we want to see the children become productive citizens. We want to see them grow up to do positive things. We don't want to see them in foster homes. I'm not saying all foster homes are bad, but we don't see them in foster homes. We don't see them giving up in life. We do not want to see them go out and repeat the cycle of the addiction that got them in the situation that they're in now. Well, matter of fact, we have a couple of grandchildren right now. Well, all of them doing very well. But we have one that's honor roll, principal list, honor roll, top. She's going to get scholarships, you know. Then we have another one. She's starting to pick up. She's on the honor roll. Then we have the freshman. He's trying to find his way. But see, that's the purpose. That's the point. We all have a purpose, and that's the point, to see them become productive citizens.
Well, I want to thank you both for your honesty, your strength, compassion. Your story reminds us that healing is not a solitary journey. It thrives when communities unite. And to our listeners, remember a single act of kindness, a shared meal, or a simple moment of care can truly change someone's life and make a difference.
Amen.
I want to mention, to help our kinship families, we did recently update our publication of the Parenting Smarts Resource Guide. This is our 11th edition. That publication is available by contacting the Area Office on Aging. In addition, we are excited to release a new publication that's entitled Empowering Kinship Families, Resources for Opioid Recovery and Prevention. That is a companion piece to the Parenting Smarts and will be hitting the streets soon. Also, I want to mention to our listeners, if you are a kinship caregiver, a grandparent or relative caregiver raising children, and you don't have support, we are here to help. We serve kinship caregivers that reside in Lucas County. And to access our services, you just call the Area Office on Aging at 419-382-0624 and ask for the Kinship Navigator Program. Welcome to the Better and Longer Podcast. In today's episode, we're featuring our new series, Roots of Resilience, Empowering Kinship Families Amid Opioid Recovery. This series is made possible by the One Ohio Recovery Foundation.